We've all done it. Stock our fridge with leafy greens and good intentions, only to have our future self sacrifice quality nutrition for the convenience of takeout. Keep your body and mind nourished all day with a whole body meal shake from Ka'Chava. It's got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, adaptogens, and so much more. But the best part? It actually tastes delicious. With 6 indulgent flavors to choose from, it's easy to make a superfood-packed shake. From chocolate, vanilla, and chai, to matcha, coconut acai, and strawberry, you've got endless ways to personalize your Ka'Chava. Whether you prefer it straight up or enjoy adding fruit, peanut butter, nut milk, or even iced coffee, with every 2 scoops of Ka'Chava, you're getting 85 plus superfoods, nutrients, and plant-based ingredients. Your future self will thank you. Go to Ka'Chava.com and use code FITNESS for 15% off your next order. That's Ka'Chava, K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com, code FITNESS for 15% off.
You're listening to the G-Ray Records Music Network. You enjoy...
Welcome to The Deep Dive. Today we're diving headfirst into the pretty fascinating world of nerd pop culture.
Yep, we've got your sources lined up. There's this great panel discussion, Nerd HQ 2015, a conversation with the nerds of pop culture, and also a really insightful paper, The Rise of Nerd Pop Culture, From Fringe to Phenomenon.
So our mission for you is to really unpack what being a nerd means today.
Exactly. How did it go from this like niche thing to being everywhere? And we'll hear some surprising views from, well, astronauts, creators, really passionate people.
Okay, let's unpack this then. First off, maybe challenging some old ideas.
Yeah.
The term nerd.
Yeah.
It used to feel pretty limited, right? Tied to specific hobbies.
Totally. And the paper highlights that jump how nerd pop culture has sort of leveled up. It calls it moving from fringe to phenomenon.
So things that were once, you know, kind of niche.
Right. Like anime debates, superhero lore, gaming fandoms, cosplay competitions. That stuff is now mainstream currency. Think about gaming and esports filling stadiums.
Yeah.
Or comic books and superheroes basically taking over movies.
Definitely.
And sci-fi, fantasy... They're cultural landmarks now. Plus, anime and manga, huge global audiences, even fashion collabs. Yeah. It's massive.
Okay, but here's where it gets really interesting for me. One panelist, they offered a different definition of nerd.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't just about, say, liking specific games or Star Trek. It was more about being super passionate about something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, diving deep into things. Really caring beyond just scratching the surface.
That depth, yeah, that's crucial. And the paper kind of backs this up. It talks about why nerd culture rocks the mainstream.
Okay.
Through its storytelling power, pulling people into these huge worlds, and also authenticity fans are really invested. Plus, obviously, the massive merch and monetization side.
Right, the business aspect.
But also importantly, inclusivity and identity. Being a nerd isn't an insult anymore. It's become like a lens to express individuality and explore diverse identities.
That really connects with what the panel said about community. You mentioned Comic-Con. Uh-huh. It becomes this powerful space for belonging.
Yeah, that instant connection.
Right. With strangers, even. Just celebrating, being excited about the same thing. The panelists call themselves permission machines.
Permission machines. I like that.
Yeah. Like encouraging people to just let their freak flag fly, give in to the thing they can't not do. There's this real optimism there, trying to make the world, you know, a little bit more welcoming for everybody.
And that community feeling, it fuels a serious business boom. The paper mentions these deep dive nerd pods like podcasts or forums with super loyal fans, and they're finding ways to monetize.
Mm-hmm.
And even things like music crossovers, nerdcore hip hop, for example. It just shows how engaged these communities are.
And, okay, being a professional nerd apparently has perks. One panelist joked about tax write-offs.
Oh, yeah.
For all the nerd stuff, they buy movies, toys, eBay finds. They called it research.
Huh. That's brilliant.
It really speaks to that utter validation, you know? Building a whole career out of what you loved as a kid, mm-hmm. turning weird into something celebrated. Imagine writing off your action figures.
Living the dream.
So from this world of passionate nerds, let's take a really deep dive. Let's talk space. One of the panelists was an astronaut.
Yeah, and this was fascinating. He actually pushed back against the whole moonshot idea.
Really? How so?
Well, he felt that every generation shouldn't have a moonshot, like just one big first. He argued for building on progress, creating a long-term program.
Okay, so more sustainable.
Exactly, leading to a permanent base on the moon and eventually Mars, not just chasing headline-grabbing firsts. He pointed out things kind of stalled after the first moon landing. There was a huge lull.
That makes sense. But beyond the big picture, he shared some amazing, like, human details about living in space.
The small stuff, yeah.
Like the guitar on the ISS. It wasn't random. Apparently, a NASA psychiatrist realized astronauts needed more than just science up there. They needed culture.
Ah, interesting.
So they sent a guitar up in 2001, and he said it's played pretty much every day. It even led to him recording an album, that famous Space Oddity video. He said it helped let someone see what it's actually like on a spaceship.
That's incredible. And then there was the popcorn story.
Oh, right. The popcorn. You can't just microwave it.
No. Get this. The microwave uses a magnetron, right? And apparently, its frequency was too close to the frequency used for the explosive bolts on the old Mir station.
Wait, so microwaving popcorn could have blown something up?
Potentially. Maybe. Crazy, right? And pre-pop stuff just turned to dust because of vibrations.
So what do they do?
Popcorn balls, basically glued together. And they had to eat them leaning over a vent with a filter to catch the crumbs, then vacuum up the dust. Just shows how even simple things are complicated up there.
That's wild. And what about the smell? You mentioned the shuttle.
Yeah, the shuttle apparently smelled really bad. His description was 7 people in a camper van for 2 weeks with where your toilet's in there.
Grim.
But the space station, surprisingly, no smell at all. He said you never once smelled another person, even, you know, after using the toilet. Odorless. Bizarre.
Wow. But space travel takes a serious toll, physically.
Oh, absolutely. He talked about recovery. Coming back to Earth, his balance system didn't work.
Can't even imagine.
His heart struggled to pump blood upwards, immune system depressed, heart actually got smaller, lost a lot of bone.
Jeez. How long did that last?
He felt sort of normal after a few days, maybe almost like you after a couple weeks. But he couldn't run for about 4 months. And the bone density. Took about a year and a half to come back. It's a massive shock to the system.
Yet, despite all that, the inspiration is huge. He credited sci-fi, didn't he?
He did. Things like Star Trek and 2001, A Space Odyssey, said they opened up my whole mind to the possibility of space travel.
And he had thoughts on the movie Gravity.
Ah, yeah. He said the visuals were the best of any space movie ever done, capturing the scale and isolation. But the plot line and the technical stuff made him the worst guy in the world to see it.
So, not quite accurate.
Let's just say his advice to the director was simple, be kind.
Okay, bringing it back down to Earth.
Mm-hmm.
The panel talked about other cultural stuff too. Like, why is food TV so huge right now?
Yeah. Well, one panelist, a food expert, had an interesting theory. They suggested that with society feeling very fractured online, we have very little culturally in common anymore.
Hmm. Okay.
But anthropologists say there are two universal things groups love, laughing together and eating together. So food becomes this unifier. It connects us to each other, our heritage, our families. It's common ground.
That makes a lot of sense. Now, shifting from food to fighting robots, BattleBots came up.
It did. Several panelists, including robotics experts, were really pushing for it to be seen as a legit sport.
What was their argument?
Basically, it gives you all the same thrill of competition, the excitement, the spectacle, without anyone actually getting hurt.
Unlike, say, football.
Exactly. They contrasted it with worries about concussions in the NFL or athletes having careers cut short by injury. Here, it's the machines taking the hits.
Okay, but then the conversation took a more serious turn, didn't it? Connecting robot combat to drones and warfare.
Yeah, it got pretty heavy. The panel pointed out how we're increasingly moving to keeping soldiers out of combat using drones.
Which raises big questions.
Huge questions. Like, if one country's drone blows up another's, is that now going to war? Does it feel the same? It creates this distance.
A detachment.
Right. Potentially removing the human emotional resonance from violence. The worry is being so far removed, it becomes easier to just, you know, push to go boom. One panelist was very clear. Don't give a gun to a robot.
That's a sobering thought. Okay, let's move to something a bit more personal. Pursuing passion, building a career. The panelists were quite open about this.
Yeah, it was refreshing. They admitted to totally nerding out or geeking out when meeting people they admire, like the astronaut or a famous director.
Even if it breaks professional protocol.
Exactly. It speaks to making a career out of what you love. You end up surrounded by the same kind of people sharing that common passion, that common goal.
So the advice is,
find your long-term passion and then make all the little decisions that kind of nudge your life in that direction, even if you hit dead ends. It's about the overall trajectory.
And it's not always a straight line, right? One panelist really emphasized that.
Absolutely. They said, looking back, careers can seem linear, but there's no such thing as a before and an after. Life's this big, wide continuum.
With twists and turns.
Left turns and right turns and wrong turns and dead ends. And those aren't mistakes. They're completely intrinsic to the process. You learn from them.
So is passion really enough?
Well, they argued that passion is enough in the sense that the universe, or whatever you want to call it, cares about how well you can align your capabilities and skill set to what it is you really want to do.
Okay.
It means being willing to roll the dice on big changes, but also knowing it's a continuous journey, often uncertain. You have to keep aligning yourself.
It's not easy, though.
Yeah.
Well, one panelist was really honest, saying even with huge success, it's been difficult the whole time.
Yeah. They warned against thinking there's some breaking in moment, and then it's all gummy drops and smooth sailing.
Those moments are short-lived.
Like 5 minutes of happiness, maybe, before the next goal appears. Which means, as they put it, you spend 95% of your time, like, not being happy with where you are now if you're only focused on the finish line.
That's a really important perspective.
So the real key is enjoying the process of getting to that point, celebrating the missteps and the struggles. One person shared a great saying, these are the good old days.
Right now.
Right now. And apparently someone wrote on the space station wall, there's nothing more important than what you're doing right now. Just be present in the journey.
Because ultimately, especially in creative fields, there's always a great deal of uncertainty. That feeling of constantly clawing your way, wondering if you're faking it.
Yeah, that imposter syndrome feeling seems pretty common. Their conclusion, given all that uncertainty, your only choice is to have fun. Find joy in the work itself.
So to wrap things up, let's circle back to where a lot of this passion started for them. Science fiction.
Yeah, they listed some really foundational influences. It was clear how much these stories meant.
Right.
Star Trek came up a lot for its optimism and vision of a better humanity. Arthur C. Clarke for blending real science with the fiction.
Okay.
Jules Verne's Mysterious Island, that idea of smart people inventing their way out of problems. The essence of human adventure.
Any others?
Oh, yeah. Michael Crichton, Isaac Asimov, Kurt Vonnegut, Star Wars, of course.
And one director specifically mentioned Jurassic Park.
Yeah, I saw it at age 10, and it was like, boom! Realize what movies were, how they could affect you. It set them on their path.
It's amazing, isn't it, how these fictional worlds playing Star Trek with, like, chocolate canisters can actually shape real life, leading to careers in space or film. The power of imagination. Wow. What an incredible journey we've been on through nerd culture, the realities of space, societal connections, and just figuring out how to follow your passion.
It really covered a lot. And thinking about all these insights, You know, nerd is no longer niche. The path isn't straight. Your interests can actually change things. It leads to a final thought for you, listening.
Mm-hmm.
How are your passions, maybe the things you dive deep into, how are they adding to the culture around you, even if you can't see the whole path yet? What's that little curiosity you have that might be shaping your future? Or maybe, just maybe, the future for all of us.
You hide in shadows.